Scott Simon is the host of NPR's Weekend Edition since it first aired in 1985 and is one of the best-known voices on American radio. He will be in town talking about his new middle-grade book, Sunnyside Plaza, on Tuesday, the 10th of March. The book tells the story of a developmentally disabled adult woman who seeks to solve the mystery of a number of suspicious deaths in her group home. Scott Simon will be part of the New York State Writers Institute Visiting Writers Series, and on Tuesday, the 10th of March, he will be having a conversation and a Q&A at Page Hall at the University at Albany downtown campus. Earlier in the day, there will be an informal craft talk, which will take place at 4:15 in the Standish Room in the Science Library at the University at Albany uptown campus. Again, the name of the new book is Sunnyside Plaza, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Scott Simon back to the roundtable. Scott, thank you very much for being with us.
Nice to be back.
What brought this particular book to be?
I had worked in a home similar to the one that I write about in Sunnyside Plaza, that I, you know, kind of create in Sunnyside Plaza, when I was 19, and it was a transformative experience. I don't say that lightly. It was important to me, and in many ways more important than any war I ever covered, any political campaign, any ostensibly famous person I ever interviewed. It really opened my eyes at the way we can look at each other and the labels that we put on each other. And I had been looking really for a way to tell a story set in a community like this for years, and you know, other things came up. I didn't quite know how to do it, and then I had children, and I began to realize that the books we read as children are the ones that stay with us. And I don't know about you, Joe, but we both interview a lot of authors,
right?
Many, I'm sure, all of them accomplished, and many big name authors. You know, and God bless each and every one of them. A few weeks after I finish the interview, I'm a little foggy on the details of their books.
That's right.
But the books we read as children are the ones that stay with us. They get into our bones. They play a role in our lives. And so I figured, well, let me try and tell this story this way for this audience.
So in this book, we meet Sally, known as Sal Gal, and she's very happy. She's working in the kitchen at Sunnyside Plaza, and then she is called into action.
Sal is 19, developmentally disabled, has lived in some kind of group home for some time. She is sort of a composite of two or three people that I knew when I worked in a place called the Approved Home on Wilson Avenue in Chicago. I was a case aide, and I became particularly close, I think, with people not only on my list who I would help get ready for bed at night, but some of the people who worked in the kitchen. They chopped, they rinsed, they served, they put things out. And so I decided that if I could put someone in the kitchen, I would put them in a position of being able to observe really almost everyone in the home and to overhear a lot of conversations once something happened and people came in from outside the home. And you know, I think it's one of these terrible, damnable tendencies that a lot of people, when they encounter people who are developmentally disabled, they think that they can't hear stuff, or if they can't hear things, they don't understand it. And so I wanted to put Sal Gal and a few others in a position where she could overhear things. And yes, certainly could understand a good percentage of what was going on.
On the cover of the book, right in the middle of a tree next to Sunnyside Plaza, it says, "Kindness starts from within." Why was that such an important mantra for you in the book?
You know, I saw exceptional kindness when I worked in a group home. I remember the first day that I walked in there. And I was being shown around by the administrator, and we passed a folding table in the what was called the common room, where there were a group of adults who were sitting around and coloring, and they were finger painting, and they were drawing pictures of dogs and cats and scenes set in parks with crayons. And you know, when you see, let's say, a 5 or 6 year old do paintings like that, I think most adults, not just parents, go, "Oh, another Picasso. Oh, look at that. Someday this kid's going to be another Monet, a Grandma Moses." But you see a 50 or 60 year old man or woman do that, and your heart tends to get very full and you feel very sorry for them. And within 2 or 3 days, I just learned that that was misplaced. I just learned that they had very rich, very full lives. And I was particularly struck by the kindness within, the way they looked at each other. All the time that I spent in the home, I never heard anybody who lived there refer to somebody by how they looked. I never heard them refer to someone by their age. I never heard them refer to anybody by their race or by their religion. And at first I thought, well, they just don't know that stuff. But then I began to realize, no, they just don't care about that stuff. They look in a way more deeply into each other. And they looked out for each other. They helped each other. They tried to get each other through the day and often needed great resources of ingenuity and spirit to do that. So I just found myself swept up in admiration for the people that I met, and I wanted that to be reflected in the story.
This is the characters that you write about, Sal Gal being one, but of many others. These are characters you don't often see in fiction, certainly not adult fiction, and not much in young adult fiction either.
Well, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to do it. That was very important to me, that I thought that I had been blessed enough in my life to share an experience that is not available to a lot of other people, and I wanted to put this across. Particularly to young readers, so that they might be able to. And when I say learn a lesson, you know, Joe, I don't want to make this sound like this book is, you know, a cough right. syrup or something that would be good for someone. I hope it's enjoyable. I hope it's entertaining. I hope when somebody turns over the last page, they will have enjoyed spending time with the people who live in Sunnyside Plaza with the home, that they enjoy the people that they meet and the people whose lives they're able to inhabit in a small way for a number of pages. But I also didn't want to create some kind of adolescent savior in the story. I didn't want someone to come in from the outside and solve the problem, because I thought that would be phony, and it wasn't what I wanted to do with the book. I wanted the people who read it to understand that the people who live in that home understood their own lives and could be the instruments of really their own satisfaction and being able to solve the mystery.
And that's it. It's a really good mystery, too. You were saying about cough syrup, but it really is a great mystery.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. Well, I think you need to give people a reason to flip over the page. And I try to do that. And I hope also, as the longer the book goes on, the more you care about the people who live in the home and the more you get concerned at the circumstances that are going on in the home that seems to threaten them.
Do you see yourself writing about them again?
Well, that certainly has been raised by the publisher. We'll see. I don't know. It's possible. We'll find out. I'm not sure.
You've written many books. What do you look for in a project? What is it that guides you in that direction?
You know, in each and every case, in every book I've written, I try to take something that, or at least so far, I've tried to take something that's been important to me and tried to share a sense of it with readers. I mean, I covered the war in Bosnia and grew to care very deeply about the city of Sarajevo. And that was reflected in the novel I did about two teenage girls during the siege of Sarajevo called Pretty Birds. Probably nobody needs to be told, I deeply love Chicago.
That's right.
I have particular affection as a Chicago reporter for the, what I'll just call the antic political climate of the city. So I wrote a novel called Windy City, which is set, I call it a political comedy set in the Chicago City Council, because I don't call it a satire, because I think the city council is usually beyond satire. My wife and I have grown to care very deeply about adoption. We have two daughters, 16 and 13, who happened to be adopted. And I think our experience and the experience of others who we grew to know made us want to do a book about what I really do consider to be the blessing of adoption. So I did a book called Baby, We Were Meant for Each Other. I've certainly loved my mother, and I found out when I tweeted from what turned out to be her last days in an intensive care unit. She was just so bright and funny and interesting that a lot of people grew to identify with my mother and be charmed by her. So that was my book, Unforgettable. So in each every, I haven't written a book that I don't care about. And maybe that's true of any book that you put your heart and your soul into. I also think, Joe, this partly has to do with my wife and I having children. I love doing our radio show. I love doing everything I do in broadcasting. It's given me a wonderful life, and it's given our family a lot of advantages and exposure to the world and a wonderful life. But I also know people hear that and pick up their lives. It gives me some satisfaction. I'm speaking to you from my home office. You know, that our daughters one day will be able to look at X number of books on a shelf and say, this is what our dad really cared about. Mm. This is what really drove his life.
With that said about Weekend Edition, how are things going? You know, I talk to a lot of reporters who cover stories day to day, and they talk about how their lives have completely changed in the last several years. And how hectic and manic it has become to cover what they used to cover. Have you seen a fundamental difference in Weekend Edition of how you cover the news?
Oh, yeah, sure. And I should explain, some of it is not unwelcome. I want to be careful in saying this. Mm-hmm. I mean, for one thing, just at the most superficial level, for the first time in my life, our daughters are paying attention to what I do for a living. I think because of all the antipathy reporters receive from certain quarters, they now think that I must be doing something vaguely important if so many people seem upset by it. So I think there's that. I also think in a way, and look, I certainly want to be careful with this. Those of us who are blessed enough to be reporters in the United States are very fortunate on this planet. In Russia, the best reporters are often thrown out of windows. In China, the best reporters are often imprisoned. In Mexico, in the Philippines, in Brazil, in countries across the world, great reporters are endangered. That is not the case here in the United States. I mean, I think there are good questions about the industry and the effect of social media and all of that.
Right.
But for the most part, and I don't forget, because we just passed an anniversary, unfortunately, of the killings in the Capital Gazette newsroom in Annapolis, Maryland. I don't completely dismiss the idea that a lot of reporters feel exposed and vulnerable in a way we didn't before. But all of that being said, if we do our jobs well, we're much more likely to win an award than to have to worry about our welfare. All of that being said, I think the atmosphere has gotten much meaner, much more polarized. And I think that that just makes the argument for what we do, and I don't mind saying the argument for the way we do it on NPR, all the more important. I mean, we're living in times when there seems to be a feeling that you can state all kinds of things that are untrue, but if you do it loud enough and keep repeating it, that somehow people will begin to accept it. And I think it's more important than ever that people have sources of news. I, of course, nominate ours as being preeminent, sources of news that are unbiased, that are unafraid, that will tell stories in the best way we can to help explain people and reach into their lives and surprise them sometimes with things that they might not have known about or situations that they thought they understood and discovered that they don't. So I think in many ways it's made our work more important to do than ever. Not to mention the fact that, you know, hosting a weekly show on Saturday, we used to think that we could have things pretty much locked into place by 7:30 on Friday night.
Right.
Past, you know, 3 years, and I don't mind saying in this administration, there's the Friday night news dump. There are things that get announced on Friday night all the time that substantially change the complex of our show. So we've had to go into extra staffing to make certain that responsible news officials are following it. So, you know, and we're glad to do it. We should do it.
Scott Simon is host of NPR's Weekend Edition. He is also the author of the new book, Sunnyside Plaza. He'll be part of the New York State Writers Institute Visiting Writers Series coming to town on Tuesday, the 10th of March. At 7:30, he'll be doing a conversation and a Q&A at Page Hall on Western Avenue at the University at Albany downtown campus. He will also be part of an informal craft talk that will take place the same day at 4:15 in the Science Library at the University at Albany uptown campus. And you can find out more information about all of that by going to nyswritersinstitute.org, nyswritersinstitute.org. Scott Simon, again, is the author of the brand new book, Sunnyside Plaza. It is out from Little Brown. Scott Simon, thank you very much for being with us. We look forward to having you in town.
My pleasure. Can't wait to be here.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Sunnyside Plaza by Scott Simon. It is published by Little Brown. And again, you can find out about Scott Simon's events with the New York State Writers Institute on Tuesday, March 10th by going to their website, nyswritersinstitute.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.